This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 302 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, Max.
Hi, David. How are we doing?
I'm doing really well. For all of those people who don't know yet, I actually started a new position. I am now working at the American Helicopter Museum in Westchester, Pennsylvania, where we even have drones there. I'm looking forward to the adventure of being around a lot of rotorcraft for hopefully a long time.
Very good. I haven't been to that museum yet, but it's on my list now of destinations to visit. So look forward to seeing you there.
But we should get talking about unmanned helicopters and not real helicopters. We've got a story about border detection. ISS Aerospace launches a fuel cell story. FAA and NASA and UAS partners conclude the pilot program. Yay, we won't have to talk about the pilot program anymore. I thought this was interesting. 10 of the most popular FPV drones this fall. Some other stories, and evidently the winner of the longest headline ever, and it goes to AeroVironment. But we'll talk about that a little later. Should we get started with the show, Max?
Yeah, but before we do, I just wanted to mention, last week we talked about Skypull. That's that tethered drone that generates electricity. And remember, I said I didn't understand how the thing worked, and you explained how you thought it worked. But I, you know, I was just a little uneasy after that. So I contacted Skypull, and I heard back from their CEO, Nicola Mona, who said, "Skypull works like a kite that pulls on a tether, unwinding it from a ground generator. There is no electricity passing through the tether. Once the tether is fully unwound, Skypull dives back down to a minimal safety altitude while the tether is rewound and initiates the cycle. It's a pumping cycle with around 80 to 85% of the time producing energy and 15 to 20% of the time not." So I guess the way this thing works, David, is that, again, it doesn't send electricity down the tether, but it's pulling the tether and turning this drum, I guess, which then generates the electricity. So that's how I understand this one works.
It's a yo-yo.
It's like a really big yo-yo.
You know, it goes down and goes back up, and that's how it generates the power. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, I sit corrected on that, but I'm glad you went ahead and did the research. And maybe we should pursue that a little further and have them come on to talk a little bit more about that project.
Fascinating.
So
with that, David, now let's get started.
All right. Now that we've done the errors and admissions portion of the show, our first thing comes from ihis.com. UAVs recruited for border detection. It looks like the U.S. Customs and Border Protection has been working on with the Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate to build and test small drones for Border Patrol.
This is coming from Planck Aerosystems, P-L-A-N-C-K, and it's reported that they are to be granted $200,000 to test its prototype. And they expect this to be flying in operational environments over the next 3 to 6 months. But it's an autonomous UAV. Interesting, David, it can launch from and land on the bed of moving vehicles.
It's the whole get ahead of the target. So you launch from the vehicle, and I guess the vehicle will chase after it. It does have advanced computing capability as well as fully autonomous navigation. It's interesting that we've got to the point where these things can match speed and land on a moving target all by themselves without any help from people.
Yeah, that's amazing, autonomously. And of course, this, as you might think, this device would provide full motion video. Some other features of note, including automatic target detection in geolocation, and it's a portable solution. So the idea is that these drones would be providing real-time situational awareness for the Customs and Border Protection agents. It's not a particular stretch, I don't think, David, for this kind of an application.
No, and I believe that this kind of application would go beyond just CPB. All law enforcement would love to have eyes in the sky and not necessarily via helicopter or a large presence. You know, being able to throw a drone up in the air in a time of urgency is kind of a good thing. And from a moving object, that's kind of impressive. Well, it's that time of the week again, Max. If I see the word fuel and followed by the word sell, it's got to be something we need to talk about, or you need to talk about.
This comes from SUAS News. ISS Aerospace launches Sensus hydrogen fuel cell UAV with AMS cylinders. So it's kind of a mouthful. ISS Aerospace has developed this Sensus UAV, S-E-N-S-U-S. And they call it a modular hydrogen fuel cell UAV platform. And the AMS cylinders part of it is that it includes an ultra lightweight carbon composite gas cylinder from AMS Composite Cylinders. And this thing kind of looks like a pretty substantial, pretty beefy quadcopter with what looks like a red fire extinguisher on top, you know, of the type that you might have at your home. That, of course, is for the compressed hydrogen for the fuel. Depending on the size of the cylinder, you get up to 2 hours of flight time. And in this particular case, the air-cooled hydrogen fuel cell module comes from Intelligent Energy.
I thought it was kind of cool that the fuel cell was on top of this multi-rotor. I guess the advance right now would be the use of composites for the cylinder, which we all know is because of weight. So, and getting longer endurance using the fuel cells with less weight having to carry the fuel. So I'm wondering, though, does it get any buoyancy from all of this gas attached to the top of the fuselage?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think there's a component of that, but of course, as we've talked, these applications that we see use compressed gas. Ultimately, and perhaps we can get to the point where liquid hydrogen could be used. But the issue there is you need, as you might think, a much more robust containment vessel for liquid hydrogen than you need for compressed gas. So all the applications now are compressed gas. Now, this ISS Aerospace, they're a UK company. They design, manufacture, and support UAS, as well as military UCAS, unmanned combat air systems. They've been around not too long, just since 2015. They have existing customers, mostly large multinationals and governments, oil and gas operators, things like that. But it's a kind of a coming together of these three companies in an interesting way. AMS Composite Cylinders is, as their name suggests, is a supplier of gas cylinders. They've been around since 2006. They're based in Taiwan, and their primary market is to the healthcare and emergency services industries, so compressed air for breathing. And then finally, the fuel cell company, Intelligent Energy, they focus on fuel cells, proton exchange membrane, or PEM, fuel cell products. And their current customers are in the automotive, stationary power, and also the UAV sectors. But they've been in the fuel cell business for over 30 years. But just a final note, David, there's a video. It's a promotional video. So, you know, like many of the promotional videos, it has that perspective. And it comes from Intelligent Energy. And it shows the sizes of the fuel cells involved here, how big they are, shows different ways they can be mounted on a drone, how the cylinder might be mounted, whether it's like we've seen in the images here on top of the drone or underneath. They also show how you could employ dual fuel cell systems, use two fuel cells for more power. And something that I think we're always interested in is, you know, how do you fuel or refuel these? And this little video shows two scenarios. In one, the fuel cylinder is staying attached to the UAV, and it's being filled from a larger tank of hydrogen on the ground. And then they also show just a simple swap out of the cylinders. But changing the connectors and all that associated with either of those two refueling methods seems from the video to be very simple, very straightforward, and that's great. Not a big deal. So we'll have that video in the show notes, and I think that's probably enough about fuel cells for this episode, David.
Well, we got to make you happy, Max. You know, but let's talk about something that made me happy this week. If you've listened to this show, you know that I've sort of it's driven me nuts the fact that we're talking about UAVs, but we've had to be talk about the FAA. NASA and the UAS partners and their pilot program. Well, evidently, the UAS Traffic Management Pilot Program has come to a close, and the FAA is doing the analysis right now. So the demonstrations were at three different sites. Our first site was Virginia Tech Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership, and they developed existing components that could be rolled out in the near term. So this is the current state for unmanned traffic navigation. What do we have that we can immediately implement? The next one, Max?
The second site that was part of this was the Northern Plains UAS test site in North Dakota, Grand Fork, North Dakota. And in that portion of the program, they were testing situational awareness.
Well, and of course, the situational awareness is the drone needs to know what to do when an unexpected object is in its path. And the third one was at the Nevada Institute of Autonomous Systems, or NIAS, in Las Vegas. And they were focused on advanced airspace drone and sensor technology. So that was, we went from present state to awareness to future state. So based on the results, the FAA will form the UTM regulatory framework. So, Max, is this where we put our bets down to see how long that will take?
Yeah, we know it's a lengthy process. And we should probably note also that this pilot program was to test safe drone operations beyond visual line of sight at less than 400 feet altitude. So this is the low altitude portion of it, the portion that's below the FAA's air traffic management system. But as you said, David, the FAA will work with this data to form the regulatory framework, which is as it should be. The FAA, again, here is not just taking the approach of having some smart people sit around and think about what they suspect or what they wish the regulation should be or what they think they should be, but it's a very data-driven approach. It may also be worth noting that across these three sites, GE Aviation was the one industry partner that participated at all three of them, and that was with their cloud-based air mobility platform. So GE Aviation played a really significant role in this, and there's an article here, a posting from the GE website that we'll also include in the show notes that gives some more information about what GE Aviation was doing in their participation in this program.
Well, congratulations to all involved. I mean, it looks like we've moved the ball forward. Now, hopefully, the FAA has enough data to process it, and we'll process it in a timely manner. So we will see. But in case you didn't realize it's midway through September, Christmas is coming. And this article was hypergridbusiness.com, 10 of the most popular FPV drones on Amazon this fall. This is a list of FPV drones that use your phone for the video. Now, I don't think they were put in any particular order. It was just a list of 10, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and there's some brands here that I'm not familiar with at all. There's a few that are recognized that everyone will recognize, but a lot of these are drones that I've never heard of before.
Yeah, the first one was the DB Power X400W FPV RC quadcopter. Now I'm wondering, Max, if these are I'll have to do some more research, but I'm wondering if these are more consumer level drones than prosumer.
Yeah, I think so. Although there are some exceptions to that. They talk about the Holy Stone HS100, kind of a fun name. Holy Stone, the Shark Spark SS41, two other Holy Stones, the F181W and the HS160 Shadow.
And of course, you can't have any list with prosumer or consumer drones without DJI. So in this case, it's the Spark is the first one on the list. The SnapTane S5C Wi-Fi FPV drone, which is, that's a mouthful.
Also the DB Power U818A Discovery. And here we go. Here's another DJI, the Mavic Pro. And finally, number 10, David?
The Parrot Anafi, which is the FPV drone set for that. So interesting. Well, if anybody has any feedback on these, we'd love to hear it. You could send it to feedback@theUAVDigest. If you've used any of these and you agree or you disagree, so send it to Max and I. We'd love to hear your opinions on these.
I guess one of the takeaways for me, David, was that it's not all just DJI, that there really are other drone companies out there. Now, certainly DJI has got the largest market share. I think most of the analysis you see peg them around 75% of the worldwide market, somewhere around there. And it's just nice to see some other brands there. But also, each of these drones in this article has a buy on Amazon affiliate link associated with it, which is maybe the real motivation for this article.
Well, you know, Amazon runs the universe, but they have their own drones too, and we haven't had an Amazon patent of the month this yet. So, but there's time left. Okay, well, maybe in this story we're barking up the wrong tree. But the next story, really, there's barking involved. This is from futurism.com. Police drone caught barking orders at Chinese driver. We're getting a lot more closer to drones taking over and now giving orders to people not doing what they're supposed to be doing, I guess you would say, Max.
Well, there's a video, and it's gone viral in China. In this video, you see a police drone that is observing a group of people on their scooters that are stopped at a traffic light. And all of the drivers of the scooters are wearing helmets, which is, I think, the requirement there, except for one individual. Now, the drone, or I guess the police officer, the traffic officer operating the drone, takes advantage of the fact that the drone has a loudspeaker attached to it.
Put your helmet on, please. And believe it or not, he does.
It's a pretty funny video in that you can hear the voice, barking these orders. And the guy on the scooter is looking around trying to figure out where's this coming from. And after a few seconds realizes, I guess, that this is serious, and so kind of tries to laugh it off a little bit, but puts his helmet on.
It reminded me of, and I'm going to date myself, but Candid Camera. Like all of a sudden, yes, the mailbox starts talking to somebody as they walk by. Now, if you're not from the States or you're a lot younger than Max and I, Candid Camera was a television show in the late 60s, early 70s, where they would just do all sorts of funny things and watch people's reactions, like have someone talking at a mailbox, you know? So this is kind of that. I got the same vibe from this video.
It does feel a lot like that. You're right. They say that drones have identified more than 2,000 traffic offenses just in this Putian city where this is being used, where police have been allowed, traffic police have been allowed to use drones just recently. But we have a link to the video. It's up on YouTube. It's very short, and you can amuse yourself watching this traffic drone reinstruct this scooter driver. If you look at the comments, I mean, because you can imagine there being different reactions to this, both positive and negative. But all the comments in this video are positive, which is kind of interesting. Now, I mean, this does come from a state-run source, so that may influence the nature of the comments. But they're all, at least all the ones that I saw, were positive about using technology to make, you know, the world safer for everyone. But take a look at the video, and you can decide for yourself if this is going too far, not going far enough, or is perfect.
Well, I mean, let's think about this, Max. I mean, you're protecting the officer from having to try to engage this guy. And we in Asia, scooters are all over the place. And B, the effect was done. No one was harmed. No one was hurt. And the gentleman put his hat on, his helmet on, which was... So I would be more concerned if it was then proceeding to drop a ticket on the guy or tracking him down that way. But I don't have a problem with this. This was a good outcome, and I think, in my opinion, a good use for a drone. Well, I'm going to give you the next opportunity to talk about our next story, since you liked this press release title or headline. So go at it there, boss.
Yeah, I saw you put the article in the show plan, when I looked at this headline, here's the headline: AeroVironment unveils Vapor all-electric helicopter UAS at DSEI, adding new and expanded mission capabilities to its family of small unmanned aircraft systems. Boy, that's a long title. So the Vapor, this is the all-electric helicopter that AeroVironment has just announced. Now, of course, AeroVironment has a line of fixed-wing tactical systems, and this is, I think, their first helicopter UAS.
Yeah, and they talk about two classes of the Vapor. One is the Vapor 35 with a gross takeoff weight of 32 pounds, and the other is the Vapor 55, which has a gross takeoff weight of 55 pounds, or 14.5 kilograms, or 24.9 kilograms for those countries that haven't landed a man on the moon. And so there's the Vapor 35 is got 5 to 10 pounds payload. Max and cruise endurance is 60 minutes with a full payload. The max hover endurance is 45 minutes with a full payload. I was trying, when I read this article, trying to decide what the application you would need to hover for 45 minutes would be. I couldn't come up with an application for that.
Well, maybe an accident scene, let's say, or a fire. Maybe you want to provide, you know, overall situational awareness and hover over the scene for an extended period of time, as opposed to using the endurance to travel some distance. But just thinking out loud, I'm curious why, since the Vapor 55 has a gross takeoff weight of 55 pounds, I wonder why the Vapor 35, the takeoff weight is 32 pounds and not 35 pounds. I wonder if there's a translation issue there. But this is something that it was announced at this DSEI exhibition, which is in that title, which is the Defense and Security Equipment International Exhibition. And so it was just held there. I don't know what VAPOR stands for, V-A-P-O-R, but I'm sure it's an acronym for something.
Yes, absolutely. He caught me off guard there, but our next story comes from one of my favorite websites, thedrive.com. Army Night Stalker Chinook teamed up with bomb-slinging drone in complex AI-enabled test. The MH-47 Chinook from the Special Operations helicopter controlled an MQ-1C Gray Eagle drone. The MQ-1C is actually a beefed-up version of the Predator for the Army. It's a more hefty-duty aircraft and is able to use multiple fuels, not just Jet A, but it can use standard gasoline for an impoverished field or something like that. So the Gray Eagle is the Army's top-of-the-line UAS. And the drone launched a Dynetics GBU-69B glide bomb. So interesting that we have a Army helicopter guiding a UAS, which is firing a long-range weapon that's a glide bomb. So you've got multiple levels of AI there.
And then what's more, in this test, after this glide bomb was released, personnel on the ground used a networked sensor system. It's called the Architecture Automation Autonomy and Interfaces, or A3I. And they actually redirected the glide bomb in mid-flight to another target, simulating a change in priorities of targets. And then ultimately the glide bomb struck the target. So this is pretty significant, I think, in terms of the integration of all these aircraft. The Chinook, the Gray Eagle drone, the glide bomb, and then ground personnel redirecting the glide bomb. So there's a lot of components to this overall system, but I think it's pretty easy to see why this is the kind of a capability that the military would find pretty desirable.
And the ability to reprioritize targets is quite a big deal, and that's come up. Over time, and normally you'd have to bomb two targets, but this is a really interesting integration for the Army using all of their tactical systems, ground, helicopter, and UAS to integrate together as for one seamless attack. So congratulations to the Army. Interesting that this will be part of the U.S. Army's similar project, cross-functional team, so multiple aircraft being able to do multiple things. And the Air Force evidently has a similar project called Golden Horde, which is another way to redirect bombs in flight to change priorities. So,
yeah, with that Golden Horde approach, I think the Air Force is looking at taking a group of cruise missiles and glide bombs and turning them into an autonomous swarm. So it sounds pretty lethal, David.
Yeah, and the last couple of weeks they've talked about the B-21, the replacement for the B-2, might actually have a swarm escort fighters that will have air-to-air ability to protect the bomber carrying all the air-to-ground weapons. So interesting where that's going to go as we talk more about the swarm technology and loyal wingmans, etc. So the last thing is we've got a video of the week, Max. I sort of put this in late. All I can say is don't eat lunch before you watch it.
What is this video of the week, David?
It's a racing drone chasing a roller coaster. Now, this is not just your normal wooden roller coaster going up and down, but this roller coaster is going up, down, left, right, inverted, does rolls, does loops, and pretty much the drone follows directly behind. Now, it's only about a minute and a half long, but you'll get the thrill of riding on the coaster without actually riding on the coaster. If this was an IMAX film, I'm sure they would need to clean up some of the aisles after it was done, but it's an entertaining little video.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening to episode 302 of the UAV Digest. We're at theuavdigest.com, and you can go straight to the show notes at theuavdigest.com/302. There you'll find show notes for this episode, as well as all the others. You can find links to the news stories we talked about, also the videos that we mentioned this episode, the fuel cell video from Intelligent Energy, also that Chinese video of the scooter driver getting chastised by the police drone, and also the video of the week.
And of course, if you want to join us on the social media universe, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can also join our Slack listener team, where everyone's discussing UASs as well as aircraft and Formula One racing and other novelties. But it's a nice closed group, and the people who are there want to be there. So that's nice. And you can get an invitation by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And if you are on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or whatever podcast catcher you use, please leave a review so other people can find us. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.